This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow is producing, and First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Jerry Lane Chevrolet provide signature support for our program. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. We start with Dr. Laura Cassidy, who for many years was a surgeon of renown. She was the go-to person for people who had breast cancer in our community, and she is an interesting person who 10 years ago started the Key Academy, which is based in the old Westmoreland Shopping Center, where we used to hear Henry Gray play the piano at Piccadilly. But the Key Academy has blossomed into a juggernaut for dyslexic children and is now being replicated in St. Tammany Parish. There will be a Key Academy there, and soon it's expected that we'll have one in Caddo Parish next year. And we will talk with her about this, but her backstory is interesting. Not only the wife of U.S. Senator William Morgan Cassidy, but she grew up in the great city of Mobile and graduated from the University of Alabama in 1977 when Bear Bryant was ruling the world. And I didn't know it until she just told me that she worked for Paul Bear Bryant. Is that right?
Yeah, don't hold it against me.
What kind of a guy was he?
A man of few words.
Yeah?
Yes.
He got the job done, though.
He did get the job done.
And you were involved in recruiting?
Well, basically, the recruits would come, and they needed escorts to the football game. And then they would have dinner afterwards, and so they needed an escort, and that's what we would do. I was in pre-med at the time, and I studied most of the time, so it was a nice way to have a little bit of time off from studying.
And while you were at the University of Alabama, Bill's brother, Steve, was playing football at LSU, a four-year starter on the defensive line. Bill was quite a player in high school, I understand. He was on a state championship team at Terra, but he did not play collegiately. But when LSU plays Alabama, is there a divided loyalty?
Absolutely.
Really?
For one game, yes. One game.
You still bleed crimson red when Alabama plays LSU. And by the way, last time I checked, Alabama wins most of the time. Sorry, Tigers, but that's the nature of the beast. But you didn't meet Bill Cassidy in Louisiana. You met him in Los Angeles. How did that happen?
Yeah, so his roommate was, he loves to tell the story, was my boyfriend in medical school. And that's how we met. But we didn't see each other we met and the boyfriend and I were no longer. And then like 3 or 4 years later at a Bible study for nurses and doctors, we met again. So,
Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles.
And you lived there 7 years, did you?
Yes, for the total of our training. We lived there before we moved to Baton Rouge. We were there for 7 years.
Were you married when you were living in Los Angeles?
At the end, about a year before we left.
And both became successful doctors. And I suspect 20 years ago, you had no idea that you would no longer be a surgeon and he would no longer be a gastroenterologist. He would be a senior U.S. senator from the great state of Louisiana. And you're head of the premier school for dyslexic children. I'm sure you had conversations about what's next, but are you even surprised at how it's evolved?
Well, I'm thankful for how it's evolved, and it sort of, I am a little surprised. It took a while because it's such a different model, but I always knew that the science told us that there are a lot of these children, and so it just took a while to convince people. And the school, no matter what I say, people can hear it or not hear it. But I think the school is a testament in the parents and the teachers of what the school is about.
Well, what percentage of kids are dyslexic?
20%.
1 out of 5.
Right. And, of course, some are mildly dyslexic, which, maybe they don't know about or their parents don't know, probably not. But then when you get to children that really struggle academically, they're bright kids and they're struggling, then it's obviously very important for them to be identified and get what they need to succeed.
How is this usually identified?
Unfortunately, a lot of times it's not identified. It's still, there's still shame because so many people don't understand what it is. And because they're struggling with usually reading and can be writing, spelling, and everything has language, right? Math is so much language. People think, oh, I must not be smart. And so the real take-home message is dyslexics, it has nothing to do with intelligence. It's a totally different system in the brain. And so one of the real pushes is to help for the identification of dyslexics. We can't take them all at our school. We want to help people identify and then figure out how best they can educate the children.
Well, once it is identified, what's the process after that?
Well, it depends on the age, and the best time to identify them is actually at the end of kindergarten. And we have a specific way that they're taught language. It just takes them a little bit longer to match the sound of the spoken word to the alphabet, but it can be done. And so we have teachers that are trained for like 2 years that know how to do that. And then it's because it doesn't go away, you don't give them a book and say, go home and read, you know, 40 pages, because they can read, but they're always slower than non-dyslexic readers. So you want to give them the accommodations they need, which now we have a lot of technology for that.
877-217-5757. You heard Dr. Laura Cassidy say that 1 in 5 children have dyslexia, and some at greater levels than others. I guess there's a spectrum like many other things. Your school, you handle people all across the spectrum, don't you?
Well, we're really for moderate to severe children with dyslexia.
Okay, so when it really is manifesting itself in a profound way. How many students now?
We have about 440 children.
At the Baton Rouge location.
Right. And this year we're kindergarten through eighth grade. If you look, we get a huge influx of children in the third, fourth, and fifth grade. We rather identify the children like we talked about at the end of kindergarten, but we're still seeing the delay. But we will welcome children at any grade.
So K through 8, 440 kids. At Westmoreland near Catholic High, and it all started 10 years ago. What was the motivation?
Our daughter. We have a daughter with dyslexia who is in college now, and watching her struggle and just when you go through that, and most parents of dyslexics will tell you the same thing. No matter how much money you have, no matter where you live, it really doesn't matter what you look like. The journey is the same, and it's really tough. And you're holding your breath for your child, and you're looking for resources. And it's just something that I believe we need to offer, because there's so much potential here, workforce potential, and potential for self-fulfillment of the child.
And soon, as in a few weeks, you will open another facility in St. Tammany Parish, and you're the founder of that one, too. How's that one going to work?
Well, we're starting with first through fourth grade. We have 119 spots, and it's full. We have had no problem filling the school. I think as we go to other locations, because we have the track history, people can come to the school. We look for locations where there are a cohort of teachers that are trained, so that the community has some awareness. So it looks like it will follow the same model that we have here. We'll add a grade a year to complete the eighth grade.
And then a year from now, if things go according to form, you will have another school in Caddo Parish.
Yes, yes.
Does it start the way the one in St. Tammany is, with about 120 students, something like that?
We probably are going to start even a little bit bigger. We had a group come from Caddo Parish, business people, LSU, Shreveport people, and they're very excited, and I think there's just going to be overwhelming acceptance of us, and so we're going to start even a little bit bigger up there.
877-217-5757 for Dr. Laura Cassidy, the founder of the Key Academy in Baton Rouge, 440 students. St. Tammany will open in a few days with 119, and then next year it's Caddo. Patricia in Magnolia Woods, you're on the air. Good morning, Patricia.
Good morning, Dr. Cassidy. I was wondering if you thought that since there's such a high percentage of children who are dyslexic, if we should be screening at pediatricians' offices or in kindergarten to help find the problem.
Yes, there is a screener that we recommend. It's called the Shaywitz Dyslexia Screener. It's actually given by the teacher. We recommend it in the spring of kindergarten because the teacher knows the child best. The problem, most screeners are not really valid for dyslexia, but this is a great screener, and it would help us identify these children.
877-217-5757. Still time to get in a few shoes. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Dr. Laura Cassidy is in the house, the founder of the Key Academy. She is the wife of the senior U.S. Senator from Louisiana, former congressman, former Louisiana senator, and longtime gastroenterologist Bill Cassidy, worked for many years at Earl K. Long Hospital. And Dr. Laura Cassidy was a prominent surgeon. When people got breast cancer, she was the go-to person. And you told me years ago that one of the reasons you left that to do the Key Academy was that you were having neck issues from looking down so much. Is that right?
Yes.
That's what caused you a new walk of life?
Yeah, it's a surgeon's hazard for sure.
But I don't see any issues now. You must have gotten good physical therapy, huh?
Well, I still have issues, but you just have to take care of yourself, right?
Okay, and it's going well. 10 years now, hard to believe. I remember when you started this, we had you on in the Key Academy for Dyslexic Children, 440 K-8 in Baton Rouge, opening in a few weeks in St. Tammany, and then next year the plan is to open a school in Caddo Parish. 877-217-5757, Dr. Keefe, I believe it is, in Jackson, Louisiana. Good morning. You're on with Dr. Cassidy.
Good morning, Dr. Cassidy. I just want to say I condemn, I welcome what you're doing because at 60 years old, I was told in the third grade I'd never finish high school. And then when I got into, was I was a freshman in college, is when a professor told me what my problem was. And then I've been working on it ever since.
All right. Sure, you hear stories like that all the time.
Yes, God bless you. It's all too often.
And it is something that if it's addressed, it can be rectified, right?
Oh, absolutely. The children can learn to read. And again, academics can be a struggle, but we have lots of workarounds once you give them the foundation for reading and writing. The technology is helpful, but it's really a self-esteem issue because they're smart and they're wondering why the heck are they struggling. And if you're told you're not smart and you are smart, you start thinking you're not.
Well, you've helped a lot of kids, but if one out of five children have it, then 440 people, that's just basically cutting the surface, isn't it?
Correct. But we're a center of best practices, and I think what we're doing, I know that what we're doing has influenced a lot of the Catholic schools in the area because one of the women that works training teachers works with the diocese. She's also working with West Feliciana. We went up to Webster Parish and did some work there. So what you learn as you get older is change is slow, but you just keep plugging. And I believe that eventually this reach will impact more than the school itself.
All right. We have a listener, Holly in the Garden District, asking about this Dyslexia Resource Center. That's independent from the Key Academy, isn't it? But you're also the founder and board chair of that, aren't you?
Yes. It's a separate 501c3, but it's under the LKA, but it is separate.
Now, is dyslexia more prominent now than it was before? Is it something that more, on a percentage basis, more children and adults realize they have?
Well, we don't have any data because we hardly have any data of because we've never tested everyone, right? And so I doubt that it's more prevalent. I just think that the way we teach in the schools is mm-hmm. different. And so it's more problematic because there are lots of entrepreneurs that are dyslexics. Mm-hmm. They're very successful. But the school was a lot different, you know, 20 and 40 years ago than it is today.
Ramsey in Villa Del Rey. Hi, Ramsey. You're on with Dr. Laura Cassidy. Ramsey? Oh, we lost Ramsey. So I'm not certain exactly what Ramsey was going to talk about, but if you will call back, we will get you in. And we do have some availability for Dr. Laura if you call us at 877-217-5757. So you got two driven, exceptional people in the same house. Dr. Bill Cassidy is a U.S. Senator, and you have this massive undertaking that's now statewide, if not nationwide. How do you make it work? I suspect you don't see a lot of each other.
Oh, no, we do. We do, and we support each other's work. And I was just in Washington these past 2 weeks. We had a dyslexia roundtable, and we had people from all over the United States come as we work to pass legislation to help at the federal level. And so he's quite supportive of my work and vice versa. So a lot of travel back and forth, but definitely we're on the same page.
Mitchell in Sherwood. Mitchell, you're on with Dr. Laura Cassidy.
I want to congratulate you, Dr. Cassidy, for helping the young people with the things that you're doing. But I'm saying, what about the public schools? Could you get help with the public schools? And Afro-American young men can't read. So,
all right. What about public schools, and which, of course, a large percentage of our public schools in Baton Rouge are with minority students? Do they have the same kind of facilities?
So we're a public school. We're just a charter school, but we are a public school. And LKA, our demographics are about 65% black, and then the rest of the kids are primarily Caucasian, but we do have a few Hispanics and Asian.
So of the 440, 65% are black.
Yes. And so when I mentioned we went to Webster Parish and we were working with West Feliciana, we'd love to work with the public mm-hmm. schools in EBR. We go to anyone who wants help, and we can help train teachers, teach you the science. And I agree with you. There are a lot more children that need to be addressed, and we're ready to help if asked.
And you're looking for good teachers, aren't you?
Yes, we have several openings. It's in science and math. It's all posted on Indeed. We are now in a partnership with LSU with the STEM program, so we're very excited about that, which starts in the lower schools and goes through the middle school. So if you're a teacher that is interested in STEM education, we're offering that $7,500 stipend to sign on, and so please check us out today.
Dr. Laura Cassidy, who is a powerful person, and she's married to another driven person. Sometimes that doesn't work out, but you've been together a long time, haven't you?
Yeah, we will have 33 years of marriage in September.
33 years. Now, what's this stuff about him running for governor?
I think people are interested in him running for governor, and he's certainly considering it. He likes his job in Washington. He's really involved in a lot of big things right now. And so I can tell you he's focused through the end of this year, focused on that, and then he'll make a decision at the end of the year.
What are your thoughts? Do you think it'd be a good thing for your family?
Well, I think our kids are, you know, grown. And so I really feel like we're at the age where do we both best serve to help? Where does God call us to be? And I think he does a great job in the Senate. I know he really likes that work. So I think the decision would be predicated on where the need best fits the ability.
when he gets attacked, and as we know, he's been attacked frequently, including the former president, do you take that personally?
Yes. I think it's harder for the spouse sometimes than the person, his or herself. I do, because I know who he is. But, you know, as time goes on, you get a little bit tougher skin, because it's pretty nasty. Politics is pretty nasty.
And the easy thing for him to do would have been to vote the other way, but he didn't, which, of course, makes him a person of integrity in the fact that he did something that's hard, and most politicians don't do hard stuff. And then to be censured by his own party?
Well, I guess that's just, you know, where we are. I would say that, you know, his family, and I'm very proud of him, and he voted his conscience, like you said, and that's what's important.
We'll spend a few more minutes with Dr. Laura Kest. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We're wrapping it up with Dr. Laura Cassidy, and then it's Lewis Owens Unglesby, one of our favorite guests, who will comment about politics. And Dr. Laura was talking about her husband, saying he'll make up his mind by the end of the year whether to run for governor. And a listener asked a few moments ago via email at talk@talklouisiana.org, you know, constitutionally, you got to live in the mansion. You got to... I like your house better than the mansion. So you get ready to move to the mansion?
Well, first, we haven't decided anything, so we got a long way to go.
And another listener asked, good question, where were you on 1-6-21 when all this craziness was happening at the Capitol? Your husband's life could have been in danger. Were you observing it like the rest of us and thinking, oh, my God?
I was in Washington, D.C. I sent our youngest daughter to the Capitol for, literally, I told her it would be a great day for her to have a civics lesson and how we transfer the power of government. And I was flying out that day. And so when I got to the airport, obviously our family's texting back and forth, not only trying to find my daughter, who was 20 years old, or probably 19 or at the time 18, in the Capitol, and my husband. So I didn't take off till I knew they were both safe in his office.
What's your perception of the former president, Mr. Trump?
No comment.
I think that says volumes.
I support my husband 100%.
That's obvious. And obviously, if he does run, and if he does win the governor's office, it'll be a team effort. I would think you would be a very active first lady if that were to come.
Well, no matter where I am, I feel like this is really, you know, I just have this incredible desire to do what I'm doing. And again, I've watched our daughter and everybody. Dyslexia is so common. It's once people know that you know something about it, they start talking to you. And so I'm just glad to have this opportunity to help others.
Well, we hope to have you back. It's been too long. And Dr. Laura Cassidy, you are commended for helping a lot of kids. And Billy and I have known people who have had battled this malady and didn't even know they had it. And one person in particular, and it's long overdue to address this. And 1 in 5 people, that's obviously a big portion of the population. That would mean about 1 million people in Louisiana have dyslexia, and some at moderate to severe stages. And that was another question from a listener. You say you're handling moderate to severe cases. What percentage of the 1 in 5, is it like half of the people who are in that 20% who have the kinds of cases you're talking about?
Yeah, so there are 12 million students. But again, we don't know. We know the 1 in 5 from the Connecticut longitudinal study, where they tested every child in every classroom in this one facility. But we don't have that. We just don't have the data. Now, we have the NAEP scores, reading scores. 50% of African Americans read below basic. They're functionally illiterate. And it's similar for Hispanics. For whites, it's 30%. And so the 1 in 5 is an easy number to understand. But how that breaks down, you know, the only real data we have is that NAEP data. And again, below basic is functionally illiterate.
Well, you're doing important work. Thank you for spending time with us.
Let's talk soon.
Thank you, Dr. Laura Cassidy. And stepping to the microphone is the incomparable Dr. Lewis Owens Unglesby, who has been practicing law since the 1970s in Baton Rouge and beyond, and just celebrated birthday number 73. He is a man who effuses energy, and now you're 73, the president's 79, and I'd say the energy gap is significant between you and Mr. Biden. What do you eat? Do you eat your Wheaties every morning?
No, I worry about getting to be 79. I watch Biden and I like Biden. If you read what Biden said, it reads good. It's just he has, I don't think he can take deep breaths, and so he doesn't project it. You know, he can say something that's very powerful, but he doesn't say it powerfully.
And he was a stutterer. So he's not a natural communicator to begin with, and now he's getting older, and he moves in ways that indicate that he has some issues with mobility. He can ride a bike a long ways. I don't think his cardiovascular condition's in question, but he just, when he walks, he's a stiff guy to look at.
I guess so, yeah.
And you're not, and you've had two knees replaced.
We got a lot of, it's time for the youth to lead us, period.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Well, we may have a rematch in 2 years, and that means Biden will be 81 and Trump will be 78. That, believe it or not, that could happen. But and we're going to talk about a few different matters with Lewis Unglesby. He's always ready to take all comers and any questions. But New York Times front page yesterday, in Georgia case involving Trump, it casts a broad net. The criminal investigation into efforts by the former president and his allies to overturn his election loss in Georgia has begun to entangle. And among those who are being talked to about it, a U.S. senator, a congressman, a local Cadillac dealer, a high school economics teacher, the chairman of the state Republican Party, the Republican candidate for lieutenant governor, six lawyers aiding Trump, including the former mayor of New York, Rudy Giuliani, the former president himself, and a woman who's identified herself as a publicist for Kanye West. So it's a wide net in Georgia. Is that where he is potentially most vulnerable?
Well, I don't know what they're doing in Georgia. I mean, Trump himself isn't, but you hear that and you think, well, it's going to dissolve into confusion and complexity. It's really very simple. I mean, it's a 10-minute case. Here's the tape. Here's what he said. Here's the law. Here's the Secretary of State of Georgia who took the call and taped the tape. And so you're guilty. Now, if you got an explanation for that, great, give it to us. It's not all this other stuff is, I don't know. I think Trump is extraordinarily lucky, evil man.
A lucky, evil man. But my guess, you being an attorney, if you got a call from Trump's team saying, Mr. Unglesby, we'd like to represent you, or we'd like you to represent him, you'd probably say, okay.
I don't know. Trump doesn't pay his lawyers. That's one reason he can't get them. No, I don't know about that.
But what would happen if he were convicted in Georgia?
I don't know.
Does he go to jail?
I don't know what the rules in Georgia are. I don't know. The governor of Georgia, presumably, if he wanted to, could give him a pardon.
That is true, although he's picked a fight with him.
If he were, you know, I mean, that's all a lot of ifs. But the fact is that the United States of America is a patriotic country founded on certain simplistic principles. Donald Trump is a non-patriotic, tax-dodging liar. And so it's just not anybody that thinks that Trump is for them is making a mistake. Trump's not even for his own family if they get in the way of what he wants to do. I think we'd spend too much time talking about him. He should be relegated to the ash bin of history, and we need to move on. And we certainly don't need a 78 and an 81-year-old man trying to lead the free world. We need somebody that understands climate change, understands economics, understands voter rights, understands fundamental freedoms, and understands things like Ukraine and can really take a strong stand. We need to have, like I say, the youth need to lead us because we've let them down.
Well, when Kennedy ran against Nixon in 1960, Kennedy was 43 and Nixon was 47. So that's 90 years. And if these two guys, Trump and Biden, have a rematch in 2024, the 90 years will go to what 78 and 81 is 100, almost 160 years. So going from an average age of 45 to an average age of 80. Now, we've made advances in healthcare, but I don't think we've made them to that point. But a listener asked about the 1-6 committee, and of course, the presentation has been riveting for those who watched. And last week we saw Josh Hawley, the senator from Missouri, who was fanning the flames and shaking his fist for these guys to do their deed. He's running, sprinting through the Capitol for his life, Louis Unglesby. What do you think?
I think that's just that's an example of hypocrisy. And what's so disturbing or funny in a way is that, you know, okay, you're Josh Hawley. You claim you're this big, tough guy, I think he was in the service, maybe. I know he's very educated. Why'd you leave your desk?
Right.
John Kennedy, why'd you leave your desk? Scalise, you could have just sat there and let them come on in. You agree with them. They're not going to bother you.
They were tourists, right?
You know, whatever. But, I mean, why do you need to go hide like a little girl under your desk bar? That's, you know, in a special room. If you have nothing to fear from these people, stand there and talk to them. Maybe they'll listen to you. And conversely, mm-hmm. if you're such a coward that you run and you hide, and then you come back and then you vote with them to overturn the election anyway. So it was a really disturbing day in terms of thinking these are people that pick federal judges and these are people that can declare war and that determine our budget. And they ain't got the mm-hmm. guts to talk to fellow Americans with whom they agree.
Well, you make a point that is well taken that this vote to overturn the election came after the riot. And those included in voting to overturn the election, there were 147 of them. Now there are 435 members of the House and 100 senators, so it wasn't a majority, but they included John Kennedy, Garrett Graves, Clay Higgins, Steve Scalise, Mike Johnson, all from Louisiana, and they voted to overturn the election and have yet to say that Joe Biden actually won. We'll talk more with Louis Unglesby after this brief timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. We will go to the phone lines, and Louis, you're going to need those headphones when we do, but Louis Unglesby is at your service, and he was on this show after the tragedy in Connecticut many years ago, calling for a ban on assault weapons. He went before the Baton Rouge Press Club, and of course, in Louisiana, that's not a popular stance, but polls have shown the margins are far closer than you would think. But the politicians, of course, they're not going to go there. But in Texas, this guy, Beto O'Rourke, has all but pulled even in polls with Greg Abbott in the governorship race there. The Lone Star State, where guns are, of course, precious, but it was 2 months ago yesterday that 21 people, including 19 kids, had their faces shot off in Uvalde, Texas, with an assault weapon. Louis Unglesby, is there momentum in this direction?
Yes. If you just read even the Supreme Court, the two Supreme Court most recent cases, the one that just came out last week, about 3 weeks ago, the court said that we fully acknowledge that you can prohibit the carrying of dangerous and unusual weapons. The Second Amendment protects only the carrying of weapons that are those in use at the time, as opposed to those highly unusual. Then if you go to the Heller case, the Supreme Court said the right to keep and bear arms conferred by the Second Amendment is not unlimited. The Second Amendment does not protect the rights of citizens to carry arms for any sort of confrontation, just as the First Amendment does not protect the right to any kind of speech. And they went on to say, we do not hold that the Second Amendment means that anybody can carry anything anytime or own any kind of weapon at any time in public use. Now, AK-47s and AR-15s, unlike any other guns that have been considered in law, have no functional purpose at all. You know, you can't hunt with them. They blow anything they hit apart. You can't hunt with them because they're not target-oriented. You can't do recreational trap shooting or something. There's no purpose of these guns, none, zero, but killing human beings. And the bullets are so large, and they go so fast, and they have so much destructive firepower that anything they hit, they obliterate. So if you get hit in the arm with an AR-15 slug, it's going to tear your arm off. It's not going to just break your bone. No one has any reason other than military people, and that's what they are. They're military assault rifles, and perhaps police. Look at Uvalde. Uvalde proved that that stupid idea that the solution to a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun, or that what we need is to turn our schools into fortresses, is a failure. Why? Because the police, rightly or wrongly, but still understood, they didn't know what they were up against because of the nature of the weapon. Now, how can you, all of us support the police? The police need to be the superior force, not the citizens, not just people wandering around. Mm-hmm. It's school. The solution now, people say, the gun nuts, let's make school more barricades, different doors, different methodologies. You want a seven-year-old who you're trying to teach about Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and the magic of life to be practicing gun safety in their and getting under their desk and things? You want teachers walking around with guns? That's just crazy. It's crazy. You have these people in line at the carpool, and they have numbers. And the school's real careful that number six gets in the car with number six so that somebody doesn't pick up the wrong kid. Now, we need that kind of security, but now we want to let people wander around with these guns? It's nuts.
All right. We do have one line open, 877-217-5757. We've had some people wait for a few minutes to talk to Lewis Owens Unglesby. And Gene in Bayou Fontaine has been waiting the longest. Henry, you're next, and then Ellen. Gene, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for bringing up this very important topic, and I wanted to ask if...
What's your question?
I'm sorry, I'm getting a little upset. I was wondering if y'all felt that these recent massacres were going to finally change people's attitudes enough that we could get some of these assault rifles off the street. It's pretty devastating to see children hit with those weapons that, as you described, just blow them up. And I feel so terrible for their families. And I just wonder if y'all see the political tide turning. Thank you.
I had an idea, Gene. I don't know if I could push it. I wish I could. I don't think Baton Rouge would do it. But New Orleans is still one of the great cities of the world, despite everything. It's one of the great cities of the world. There's nothing in the law that I read that would stop the city of New Orleans, which is Orleans Parish, from prohibiting AR-15s and AK-47s in the morning. You want to make Louisiana grow? Let New Orleans lead the way on that. Make them illegal. Pass a giant bond issue for public safety. Hire the best cops in the world and turn New Orleans into the cleanest and safest city in the South. And you'd have economic prosperity greater than we know what to do with.
Henry at the Country Club. Hi, Henry. You're on with Lewis Unglesby.
Hello, Mr. Jim. Hello, Mr. Lewis. Mr. Jim, you know, that's a top-notch lawyer you're sitting there with. We look back to the Edwards trial. he is such a good lawyer that Polizzola kicked him off the case because he didn't want the governor to have a chance of winning that thing. Thank y'all very much.
All right, yeah, and the former governor would have been 95 years old in a few days on August 7th, and Louis Unglesby was very close to Edwin Edwards, very close to him for many years, going back to his first trial, right, 1986.
Yes, he did a lot for me. Edwin Edwards did a lot for me in my career, as did many people in Baton Rouge to whom I'm eternally grateful.
Ellen in Sherwood. Ellen, you're on the air with Louis Unglesby.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Unglesby, so much for your comments. I echo what Jean, the previous caller, said. It is horrific that assault weapons are on the streets of our country, in the hands of mostly children. I don't think 18 is really an adult, especially if the person is deluded. And I like your idea of what we can do maybe in the cities. If you could share that all over the country, maybe something could be done to stop this.
All right. Thank you, Ellen. Lewis?
Well, like I say, I mean, it would be neat for Louisiana. I picked New Orleans just because it's an easier place to think about to lead on that. I'll do it for free if the NRA wants to sue, but there's not going to be any conflict about it. The conflict in the cases was on handguns. In District of Columbia, they just prohibited handguns altogether. In New York, you couldn't get a handgun without going through a pretty rigorous testing process, and they had the authority to say no to you. Both those cases, the Supreme Court said handguns, and they use the word very clearly, handguns, and they talk historically about handguns, and they go all the way back into the Treaty of Northampton and stuff and talk about small weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere do they, in fact, throughout the opinion, they suggest basically say to the country, you want to do something about these other kind of guns, give it a try. We'll probably go with you. Right. I don't know what the timidity of government is in that regard. There's no groundswell for AK-47s. Now, if you want to take it, let's think about economics. Like Richard Lipsey, he's one of the biggest gun dealers in the country, very successful here in Baton Rouge, you know. And a lot of people own these guns. Fine. For the wall in Texas, we were taking land from farmers. Well, they wanted to have the wall or we didn't. The government said the wall's important for national security. We're going to take your land. We got to pay you for it. We're going to expropriate land for this new bridge and for some of this infrastructure right. Without any thought, and we're going to have to pay people for it. Buy the guns. Back from them. They're cheap guns. They don't cost much. It wouldn't cost the government a lot of money to buy them. You make them contraband in the morning, buy them back in the afternoon after a certain period of time. Then if you have one, you get in trouble.
Gretchen in St. Francisville. Please be brief, Gretchen.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. And thank you.
So what's your question, Gretchen?
Well, I'm 82, and I wanted to speak for the wisdom. I'm grateful for those years and leaders. I have more wisdom, and pride gets quite a knocking, and you have aches and pains, but the age can be a tremendous benefit.
I guess she was talking about the two guys who may be running for president.
And, well, age, sir, I'm all for age. I want to be 82 myself.
Said, at your age,
I'm all for you, Gretchen.
I don't think Louis Unglesby's lost a step. It's an individual thing, but I think it's fair to say that both of the candidates who may be running again for president have lost a step or two. But thank you for joining us, Louis. Let's do it again soon. Always a pleasure. First Financial Tax and Accounting and Jerry Lane Chevrolet provide signature support for our programs.